Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello everyone, welcome to episode number 5 of the Self-Help Podcast. I'm your host Edward Lamb, I've got Sean Orford with me here.
Hi Ed, hi everybody.
Welcome one and all. I'm sure you know the format by now. Sean and I are going to talk at great length about a fascinating subject. Before that, we'll have a little brief interlude and talk about what's in our lives this week and what's caught our eye in the news. As ever, if you could leave us a review on iTunes, that would be superb. Head over to the iTunes website or log in via your computer or your phone and leave us a review. All feedback gratefully received. You can contact us. Yeah, you can contact us directly via our website, of course. liveinthepresent.co.uk. Let's get stuck in, Sean. What's been going on in your life this week?
My world at the moment is about developing recordings for things that I'd like to have up on the site. Obviously, there's the books and the blogs. But one of the things I'm working on is doing my meditations. And part of my meditation training was chanting stuff, not in a funny sense, but in a positive sense.
Yep.
And I've been trying to do some of that and realising how subtly out of tune I can be. So I've been playing with the autocorrect systems.
Oh, right.
Which are quite fun. You have to be subtle with them so you don't sound too robotic. but I'm expecting to sound like a choir of people fairly soon.
That would be interesting. So we could have like a number one hit in our hands.
I think we should, definitely.
Christmas number one, maybe. I'll have it ready by then. Cool, and in my life, I've been celebrating this week, not celebrating, but reflecting on the fact that I've been out of a job for 5 years, or in since, yeah, it's been about 5 years since I handed my notice in at the last regular paycheck I had, and I've been out in the wild since then, so that's a pretty good thing to look back on.
Yeah, out in the real world.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster being self-employed, I tell you, but I've learned a lot and I enjoy it, so.
It's fun.
Yeah, good going. Well, it's the same for you, right? You've been a lot longer than that.
Yeah. I've only ever really had a job in the few hours that I do every week for the NHS, but the rest of my life has either been, it was monastic originally, and then it was self-employment. Mm. So the PAYE world has never been mine to live in, really.
I've got a friend, or a digital friend on Twitter, who he has just been made redundant, and he was asking for some advice from me on, you know, whether he should take the leap into self-employment. So, obviously, it's not for everyone, but it's like I say, it's a roller coaster. But
well, one of the topics that we're going to come back to is the idea of work-life balance.
Yes.
And one of the things that happens when you're self-employed is that you don't live in a world of work and not work. You live in a world where you're living your life, really. It's a different kind of way of being.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think, well, that's next week. We're going to be talking about that.
Yeah, so okay. That's good.
That'll be interesting. Yeah. What about the news, Sean? What's caught your eye?
Two things in the news. The first one that hit me was the state of Texas has just executed its 500th prisoner.
Round of applause. Round of applause for Texas.
Since 1982. That's 16 a year. That's over one a month since 1982.
Okay.
And what they've done is they've been collecting statements from these guys before they get executed. And some of the statements are quite touching to read. Some of them are a bit scary, but we could put a link up to that. But that raises a whole issue for me about what do we do with people that we can't deal with in society. Mm. And Texas in 1982 reintroduced the death sentence on the basis that is their best solution, I guess. And we raised in the last podcast the idea about Ian Brady and what happens to him.
Yeah.
And we've been avoiding that whole idea of the death sentence in Britain for many, many years. And I know it's a hot topic now because of the Ian Brady issues. But yeah, just something to be aware of, and we'll put the link up to that.
Yeah, we'll put some examples as well.
The other thing I have to raise is the Rolling Stones at Glastonbury, which someone said to me was like watching 70-year-olds doing a workout. but I think that it's extraordinary that now we've got people that are in their 70s and 80s that are still out there strutting their stuff and performing it. And that's pretty cool for all of us because it means we can all live longer and be outrageous, and that's good.
We can, and they've lived to the max, those guys.
Yeah.
Especially Keith Richards. How is he still standing? Incredible.
Yeah, yeah. He's still going.
I heard a story, again, I don't know if this is a rumour, that he has his blood kind of flushed out and changed once a year. He goes to some some posh clinic in Switzerland and...
I don't know.
They do a sweep.
And give him clean...
But he's lived quite a life, hasn't he? Wow.
Yeah. And life's for living.
Yeah.
Life's for living. You've got to enjoy it. Enjoy the moment. Because it can be gone all too quickly, you know, so get in there and enjoy it. And I think that they are a good example for all of us of people that have just done their stuff and it's been okay.
Yeah.
Get on with it.
Definitely. Yeah. Good going. And me, I'm going to mention an article that came out a couple of days ago. The title is, For a Marriage That Endures, Bite Your Tongue. And it says, keeping silent when your partner is angry is the key to a long-lasting marriage, as it helps avoid petty rows. So, yeah, what do you reckon to that?
Yeah, well, that ties in with the live in the present work that we do, where we talk about the law of allowing people to be what they are.
Yeah.
And I guess the thing is that if somebody in a relationship or somebody close to you kicks off in some way, the first question you have to ask yourself, is this my stuff or is it their stuff, before you start reacting? Mm. And if you can separate that out and you think, no, actually, that's their stuff, you can allow them to be with it because they're working through whatever they're working through. You don't have to make it your problem, too.
Mm. You know. So, cool study. I'll put the link up. It's San Francisco State University. They monitored a load of middle-aged couples for a good while. So, quite interesting there. But good advice, I would say.
Yeah, I wonder whether our wives would say that we shut up and allow them to.
That would be interesting.
Yes. Perhaps we could do some immediate research on that.
We'll let you know next week.
Yeah.
Let's move on to this week's topic. We've got the title, Why Do We Change Ourselves? And we're looking... Originally, it started out thinking about cosmetic surgery and how it seems to be more prevalent, or it is. It's obviously cheaper than ever, and I wouldn't say... I don't actually know anyone thinking about it that's gone under the knife.
Oh, I know loads.
We'll talk about them, but... It's in the news a lot more, and it's a fascinating field. We've been doing things to ourselves and our bodies for hundreds of years, I've read, since I'm researching this topic. Sean, do you want to talk a little bit about
it? I think that probably as far back as we can go, we realised that people did things to make themselves look different, whether it was dyeing their bodies blue or the way they did their hair. There's also lots of information about tattooing. The New Zealand Maoris do that kind of thing a lot. In Africa, there was lots of what's called scarification, where you cut and then you rub some irritant into the wound so that you get scarring. And that scarring is very often patterned. Then there's the idea of people like the giraffe women who had their necks extended. I think it's New Guinea, where they put the wooden plates in their lip and in their ears, that kind of thing. It's been with us forever. The issue for us in our society at the moment is we do crazy things because we can. Medicine offers us these ideas. And I suppose our question today is, why is it okay? Mm. Is that all right?
Well, the more we were discussing this before we came on, obviously, to get the old creative juices flowing. But the more you think about it, it's difficult to draw the line, isn't it? Because, okay, we've got the one end of the spectrum where people are having themselves cut open and things implanted, which is crazy in my mind. But then, is it any different to waking up and combing your hair in the morning? You know, where do we draw the line?
Well, you and I don't have beards. You may have a bit of stubble sometimes, but it's like we shave. If we were in a natural situation, we'd all have plaited beards down to our navels, and we'd have long hair, wouldn't we? As soon as you start to do something to your body, I guess the question is, when does it stop? If it's okay to cut your hair, it's okay to shave your head, that's all right. It's okay to dye your hair. When we have a lot of people at the moment who get into body distressing, so we have, people walking around with canteens of cutlery hanging off their faces and spikes through their noses and that kind of stuff. And is that any different to having a boob job?
Mm.
It's changing the way that I am. I guess the question is, why do I change the way that I am? I mean, why do you shave?
Because I know I look like a right scruff bag. Also, it's quite itchy as well. I don't shave every day. I'll leave it a few days and then it'll start to get a little bit itchy. So maybe it's just that fact for me. Just cleanliness.
But that idea that you look like a scruff bag if you don't, then it's cosmetic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things for me is that There was a huge change after the Second World War. And in psychological terms, we were aware that there were many more men being born than women. And the assumption was that in some way it was Mother Nature making up for the huge loss of the men in the wars. There were predictions made at that time that because there would be more men than women around for several generations, that we would have to change the way that men looked, so that men would become more aware of their appearance. They would get into cosmetics and fashion and that kind of stuff, because they would need to attract a mate. There would be more competition, less women, more men. Mm. And that's happened pretty much. And one of the things that we were discussing earlier was that if you look at the animal kingdom, it's usually the man who is the cock, the man who preens himself. And whether it's birds or whether it's lions with big manes or a deer with the biggest set of horns, it's the man that displays. And yet in human society, it's the woman that is the display item. It's the woman who is advertising. In the animal kingdom, it's the male that's advertising.
Mm. Yeah. Although on the others we discussed it as well before, the fact that if you go in your local gym, you'll find, you know, well, there'll be men and women there. But I went to the gym when I was at university a lot. I don't know, because I'm married and I don't need to.
You don't need to attract a male. Yeah. I'm not a male. Attract a male. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Attract a partner. Yeah.
I can't help you. I attract a good thing. But yeah, I went to the gym at university a lot. Not because I wanted to be stronger, per se. It was because I wanted to look better on a night out and when I was, you know, by the pool on a lad's holiday and that kind of thing. Again, it was cosmetic, and there, you know, that's just, so. It's, is it the male side of things increasing as well? Or
yeah. I mean, the amount of men that are using Botox now. All you got to do is just watch the foreheads of people on TV and see whose foreheads move when they move their eyes. That idea that people's faces can become frozen into a mask with the Botox, and they may look good in repose, but there's no expression in the face. The face is gone.
Yeah. There's an article that triggered my thinking on this. I'll put it in the show notes on the Telegraph about, and there's a surgeon that talks in the article, and he's asked a question about who we do these things for when someone has a breast implant. Are they doing it for themselves or for other people? And the surgeon was quite adamant that it was for themselves, it was for their own self-confidence.
I think that the two things are inseparable. If I'm lacking confidence, therefore I go and do something to myself to make myself feel more confident. One of the byproducts of that is I become more attracted to other people just because I'm more confident.
Yeah.
I mean, I, one of the things for me was when I was a young guy, I was at a Christmas do. And there were three young women. I've always been an observer of people, so I'm watching people. There's three young women that are all kind of 19, 20, very attractive, who none of the men are paying attention to. And on the other side is a woman who's in her 40s, still wearing a uniform, and all the men are around her. And I'm thinking, what's that about? And as I observe and look, it becomes clear that the young women, although they were physically quite beautiful, were kind of awkward in themselves. They weren't relaxed, whereas this tubby lady was comfortable in her own body, her own sexuality, and therefore was very attractive by virtue of how she felt, not by how she looked.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating to me, because we're obsessed with how we look, and maybe we should be thinking more about how we feel.
Mm.
You know, is attraction in a body, or is attraction in the person who's in the body?
I'm trying to think, imagine a world where no one wore makeup and no one had cosmetic surgery. Okay, let's say we're going to allow shaving and you can comb your hair. But what would that world look like? What do you think? How would we be different if these things didn't exist?
I think that potentially we might actually be happier, in the sense that we wouldn't be craving to look a certain way. I mean, what are we chasing when we're doing these things? It's okay, you know, okay, I want to look smart, I want to look attractive, that's okay. What happens if I'm starting to deny my age? I'm starting to want to recapture my youth, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that I have things lifted and pulled and tucked. And the problem is it becomes endless. And I do have clients who become almost addicted to the whole issue of doing things to their body. And the amount of people that I've worked with who will have an eye job because they've got bags under their eyes, and then following the eye job, they decide they need a nose job, and they work their way down, and then suddenly they're having their boobs lifted, that kind of stuff. And it isn't something which is to do so much for me with younger people or even middle-aged people. I'm working with people in their 70s who are having a lot of cosmetic enhancement. And it's because they emotionally feel young, but when they look in the mirror, the body that they see doesn't match what they're feeling. Therefore, they want to change it.
Ultimately, just hopping in there then, all forms of cosmetic surgery and even wearing makeup, it's just like a sticking plaster, really, isn't it, for deeper underlying issues? Is that...
Well, for me it would be, but I'm sure that people that have it done... I mean, I've worked with people that have been disfigured in an accident.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then they've had corrective stuff, and it's been amazing for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's even true of if you look at young people that have cleft palates, so that you have the maxofacial surgery. I mean, that is a huge change for a child. Mm. A child can be isolated without it. So, I mean, there's good bits and bad bits in this.
It's a fine line, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, and it's very subjective. I guess that for me, when I look in the mirror, whether I'm naked and spinning in front of the full-length mirror going, I love you, I love you, I love you, it's like accepting who I am. And if I look at myself in the mirror, I'm not the same person that I was 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, I wasn't the same person I was 10 years before that. So it is a changing thing, but it's how do I feel? How do I feel about what I'm looking at? And I guess that's what I project to other people. If I feel good, then I'm projecting that feeling of goodness to other people. And I suspect that's where attraction is. It may be that in the first instance, you look across the room and you see someone who is of a certain shape or colour or height or size or whatever, and you get that across a crowded room kind of hit.
Yep.
But when you actually get to talk to that person, it's what's inside them that is the thing that's important.
Mm.
You know, they're not just a shell.
Interesting.
Would you ever have any surgery done?
No, but it's hard to say, isn't it? You know, further down the line. Part of why it's becoming more prevalent is because it's obviously cheaper now than ever to get quite serious operations done, right? Yeah. And more socially acceptable, you know, the rise of the celebrity and all that. So never say never, but... No,
I guess one of the big things is the idea of people having eye surgery, where people having their eyes lasered, so they no longer need to. And would we see that as cosmetic, or is that practical? What is it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been thinking about that, and just the idea of it makes me a bit squeamish.
And what about the ideas of tattooing?
I'd like to get a tattoo, actually. I would. But I think, you know, it'd take me that long to design it, being a designer and visual person. I'd need to design it myself. I wouldn't just go in and get one of those, you know, like Chinese dragon on my arm or something like that. But, I'd be up for a tattoo if it meant something. And,
I was working with the doctor a good few years ago, and he could see this business about tattoos getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And he had the foresight to realise that people would start to not be happy with their tattoos. And he started a laser raise, the company, that... spend their life taking tattoos off.
Yeah.
So there's a massive business in people that want to get rid of tattoos, and that they use lasers. They're getting better at it. They used to get quite a lot of scar tissue doing it, but they're getting better at it these days.
Mm.
But that's going to be the business of the future. It's trying to undo the changes that we've done to ourselves. Yeah.
Growing old gracefully has to be the goal, though, surely. I mean...
I think being comfortable with who you are at whatever age you are. Because I think that attractiveness and sexiness come out from the way that you move and the way that you feel. And I think that the way that you look is actually secondary to that. But then I'm kind of biased. And maybe you only move in certain ways and feel in certain ways if you feel that you look right.
Yeah.
So it all kind of connects together, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's a fine line, isn't it, between it being a positive thing and being...
When you travel around and you look at different cultures, I mean, when I was in Africa, one of the things that struck me straight away was that in many of the countries I was in, people wore long, open clothing, like sort of kaftan-type clothing. And in a society like that, people aren't aware of waists. They're not aware of this idea about you've got to have a trim tummy and all that kind of stuff, because it's not on show in the same way. Whereas in our society, where people wear trousers or skirts or whatever, so, and are waisted with a belt, the idea about your belly being big becomes a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's the idea about where we are culturally is going to make huge differences. We were talking earlier on about the old idea about in China they would bind babies' feet, so they had tiny little feet that were supposed to be sexy, so that the geishas would have tiny feet, or in parts of Africa where they would bind the back of the head so that the top of the head went out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and seen as being beautiful, seen as being an improvement on Mother Nature. Is it? When I look at some of the people on TV that have been so changed that their lips look like ducks quacking, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that is just not attractive at all. And yet the person obviously thinks they look...
Well, that's right. You wonder what's going on in their heads sometimes, because you see some people on telly and you're like, oh my goodness. But they seem quite comfortable with who they are. So in that case, more power to them, eh?
Yeah. The things over here about self-tanning, the idea that you could go and sit in one of those things that, like a sandwich machine, and turn brown or peculiar shade of orange that people seem to go. That was started to be, all know that's cancerous. So people started to use spray tanning and things like that. But the evidence is beginning to come out now in research that that is carcinogenic as well.
Right.
And the message seems to be, don't interfere with what you got, enjoy what you've got, and don't muck about with it.
Yeah.
You know. But I don't know. It is very much a personal thing. I suppose in the extreme, I deal with people who go for transgender. And I'm never sure. I've worked with several people that have gone from male to female. And I'm never sure about the psychological issue. Is it right that the person should come to terms with who they are? Or is it right that they should be able to change whatever they want? And I guess it's personal choice. I'm not sure that all the people that I've worked with benefited in the way that they imagined that they would from the surgery.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a big thing, because you can't reverse, really.
That's a big decision, that, isn't it?
Wow. Yeah. And very extreme. So the one of the guys I was working with, so that his feet would fit into a woman's shoe, had one of his toes taken out and the bones associated with that toe. So his foot was narrower.
Wow.
That kind of thing. Or people that will actually change the shape of their pelvis. They will have their pelvis broken and redone. Or their jaw. Yeah, it Incredible. Becomes quite extreme. It almost becomes like...
And have you spoken to these people before they've had the surgery?
Yeah.
And have you... Well, I think you don't advise them one way or another.
No, you're working
with
them.
You've just got to guide them.
I mean, always when people go through transgender, they have to live in the opposite gender form for a year or two. Before they could go for surgery, they have to be convinced that they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that, to me, is the most extreme form of cosmetic surgery. Some people say, no, it's not cosmetic, it's emotional, or it's, you know, psychological, or it's gender, or, you know. But the issue is, am I okay with who I am? Am I okay with who I am? I'm not a young man anymore. I'm not an old man. I'm kind of in a transition, I guess.
Yeah.
But am I okay with who I am? Well, yeah, I am, really. I'm fine.
Same here. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm 31. My wife just turned 30, which she's pretty cool about. But we've got a lot of friends in that age group. Most of them are pretty comfortable with it. But there are a couple who are kind of almost in denial about turning 30, you know.
Why is it the ones with the noughts on that create the issue? It's weird, 30, 40, 50. Whoa.
40 to me is, that. I mean, and right now that sounds like a big deal. I'm sure when I get there. Hopefully I'll be...
Well, all the research now is saying that we should be thinking 55 to 65 as middle-aged.
Mm.
So you ain't even there yet. Come on.
Well, that's another thing. I mean, we need to wrap things up soon, but if people are living for... or if people are going to start living for really quite extreme lengths of time, let's say I'm... You know, as long as I don't get hit by a bus, touch wood, I'm expecting to see 100 out, you know, quite easily.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, 1 in 4 in Britain will.
Yeah. So let's say people start living to, say, 110, 120. Cosmetic surgery is...
It's big business.
It's going to be big business.
Well, maybe we need to be investing some money.
And kind of might be essential for certain aspects and parts of your body where gravity is just doing its thing. I don't know. So it's going to become more and more prevalent in the next 100 years.
But if you then... take it one step further and you start looking at the replacement of joints, say hips, knees, You know, is that cosmetic? Is that, where do we end? Where do we begin?
Yeah, well, if I still want to be active at the age of 100 and I need a new hip, then chuck one in there, get one in.
Bionic Ed.
My mate, yeah, my pal's the surgeon, he'll sort me out.
He might be a bit doddery by then.
He actually was. Yeah. He might not be able to hold the scalpel with a steady hand. Who knows?
Yeah.
Fascinating,
yeah.
Eh?
Yeah.
Right, okay, let's wrap it up. Sean, that was an interesting discussion. What's your book or resource of the week?
Well, it's following on from the same theme, really. I wrote my first book with Susan Lancaster that I think I mentioned it before a few blogs ago. The book that she's written is about this whole issue, about getting old and what does it feel like to get old. So the book's called Stay Young Because the Golden Years Are the Pits. And the issue in that for me is a very clear message of, if you look after yourself in the present, when you get older, it's going to be easier. And that, maybe that does mean going to the gym, and maybe that does mean watching what you eat and what you drink and all that kind of stuff. But it very much tied into this kind of cosmetic idea. If you look after yourself, then it's going to be easier when you get older. And if you're going to live to 100, you need to look after yourself even more.
Cool.
Yeah.
I believe you're going to do a...
Yeah, I'm doing a review of the book, and that'll be up on the site. Yeah.
We'll get that online. Good stuff. And me, yeah. Mine's not related to our discussion at all, really. I want to talk about a little photo sharing app for your phone, iPhone and Android, called Instagram, which is, it's fairly well known of. It's got, I think, 150 million users.
I've seen it, but I've never used it.
Yeah, so if you use it already, you know, ignore what I'm about to say. But if not, hop on your phone and download Instagram. Great way, really easy to quickly take a snap. You can add a couple of effects, as it was a choice of a few effects. And it's interesting how, for me, how the effects that you use, they can add a bit of nostalgia to a photo. And they can kind of, I don't know, they just kind of highlight little moments of your life nicely. And then obviously they'll save to your camera roll. And you can share them with all your pals on it, on Facebook and what have you. But for me, living in the present, I like to use photography. I don't overuse it, because there's an issue which I'd like to talk about in a future episode about, you know, when you're, say, at a concert, when you see people taking a photo of, or a video of the event, the live event. And that for me is interesting, because are they missing out on the event by taking a photo of it?
Yeah, because they're
not focused on the event, because they're trying to get a video of it and relive it.
You know, I used to think that when I was at uni and someone's giving a lecture and I'm taking notes, and am I missing what they're saying and taking the notes?
It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So Instagram, use it, but don't go overboard.
Yeah.
Try and still cherish the moment and all that.
Yeah. And I think that in terms of memories, a picture tells 1,000 words.
Yeah.
And keeping a good journal of pictures as well as words is a good thing.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Ed.
Enjoyed that.
Yeah.
For all the show notes on today's episode, visit our website, livingthepresent.co.uk. There'll be links to the various things we've talked about. We'll see you again next week. Again, visit our website for links to Sean and I on Twitter and Facebook, and to find out more about the work that we're doing. We're going to see you next week, when we're going to be talking about the work-life balance.
Yeah.
This was probably the most popular blog on our website, actually, and kicked off quite a bit of interest.
Yeah, I love it. I love it, because it's real life. It's
yeah, and the theme being that, well, for me, work-life balance is a bit of a myth. It shouldn't be your goal, a good work-life balance, because work and life should be the same thing, really.
Yeah.
If you're really enjoying what you do, there's no separation.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, sure. Love it.
Thanks again, Sean.
Okay, you take care, Ed.
Yeah.
See everybody.
Have fun, everyone. See you next week.